Thank you for joining us and for listening to this podcast. My name is Milana Hogan, and I am the Chief Legal Talent Officer at Sullivan & Cromwell. And I am joined today by SNC partner Sharon Nellis, who is the managing partner of the firm's litigation group and a member of the firm's management committee. Thank you so much, Sharon, for joining us for this conversation. We appreciate you taking time. We know how busy you are.
Happy to do it.
So I want to start at the beginning of your career. You joined the firm as a summer associate, which is the most common path for SNC lawyers. And I imagine you, like all of the extremely talented people we recruit to the firm, had a lot of really great choices and a lot of options to choose from. So I'd love to hear from you why you ultimately chose to come here to SNC.
I did not come from a family that had an experience with the law. My entire knowledge of law firms was from watching LA Law. This was a long time ago. But I was at Boston College, and my family was from Boston, and I had just married a man who was a Cubs fan, who had made quite clear to me, because this was before the days of interleague play, that he was not interested in staying in an American League city. I was not that interested in the cold of Chicago, and we decided to split the difference and look at New York. And I did have I was very blessed, and I had several options among New York law firms. I did not really know the difference from one to another. One day I was approached by the dean of the law school, who came up to me and said, "I understand you have an offer from Sullivan and Cromwell." I said, "I do." And he said, "That is the offer you're going to accept."
Right.
And I did.
Yes. And it was good advice.
It was the best advice ever. I think what my dean was trying to tell me, and I think I appreciated it even then, and it has proven to be true, that no matter what career path I ultimately took, it would never have been a bad decision to start a career at Sullivan and Cromwell.
Part of the experience here that is so valuable and so meaningful to so many of our lawyers is the mentors that they form and those relationships that they're able to develop while they're here. It's really very much an apprenticeship. Can you talk a little bit about some of your mentors along the way and further whether you still have mentors now? What happens at senior levels of the profession?
I have had nothing but memorable mentors every step of the way. And part of that is the function of Sullivan and Cromwell and how Sullivan and Cromwell worked in the 1990s and how Sullivan and Cromwell still works. Throughout my associate career, I was always working on one large matter while at the same time working on many small matters. This was an ideal way to learn the law. The first matter I was assigned to when I came to the firm was a matter for a client that I still do work for, Standard Chartered Bank. It was the only matter I've ever worked on that was turned into a Law and Order episode. It was an absolutely exhilarating experience where I had opportunity to do depositions in WITSEC, which is where you put people who are going into the witness protection program, where we had falsified tapes, where I had to collect documents from some interesting establishments. But most importantly, I spent 3+ years working closely every single day with two partners with incredibly different styles and getting to know them in a way that really allowed me to learn deeply from people with very different styles, very different ways of approaching problems, and of course, extremely talented people who supported me and allowed me to develop my own styles. My second matter I worked on, again, when that case finished, I rolled onto another multi-year, very different matter, a very intense SEC investigation, working with yet another partner who had a very different kind of style. All three of these partners I still talk to probably every single day. All three are retired now, and all three of them still come into the office, and all three of them are still available to me. I do think that whether we would call it mentoring or sponsoring or simply supporting, as somebody who's now been here or at least had close to 30 years of experience with this firm, there is community. And that community is a constant mentoring, a constant support system that allows you to make sure that you're making your best choices and continue to develop in the law even at a slightly riper age.
SNC lawyers are attractive to anybody in any market and highly pursued, and we know our associates get tons of calls all the time about future opportunities. So what keeps you here?
So as noted, I first came to this firm in the summer of 1992. I returned after clerking for 2 years and teaching for a year in 1996. So that's almost 30 years of knowing nothing but SNC as a firm. What keeps me here in 2019 is the same thing that kept me here 20 plus years ago. It's always exciting. Every single day it is exciting. It's one of the great parts of practicing law here and practicing in particular in litigation for me, where every matter is a new opportunity to learn a new subject matter, to learn it deeply, to learn new people, to work with new people. When I was a mid-level associate, I think it was a fifth or a sixth year, I had two children. I had a family in Boston. It was hard to imagine a career path that would lead me to where I am today. And I didn't come here to become a partner. I came here to practice, and with the idea that every opportunity would be open to me and I would see what opportunities came and react to them. But there was this moment where I felt it made sense for me to consider moving back toward the Boston area, where I had family, where I might have a little bit more of a support system, and potentially thought wrongly that my opportunities might be more expansive in a firm in Boston than they were here at Sullivan and Cromwell. And I gave notice, and I had a going away party, and I couldn't do it. I could not leave. I went to the managing partner of the litigation group on the Friday that was supposed to be my last day and begged for the opportunity to remain at the firm, which he thought was hilarious. And it's like, yes, you can stay, but you need to go home now and sleep for a weekend and come back on Monday. But of course, and it was that I could not imagine practicing law in a different way with different people on the different matters. The matters I was doing then, like the matters I do now, every single day, I could find them in the newspaper. They challenged me every single day. They were exciting and new to me and had me engage in a constantly new way every single day. And it was impossible for me to envision working anywhere but Sullivan and Cromwell. And ultimately, I just couldn't do it, and I still can't do it.
Yeah, it is such an amazing place, and I feel similarly. I joined almost 13 years ago. It is a hard place to leave, and you do hear so much about lateral partner moves in the press these days, and one of the things that makes me feel so wonderful about SNC is that you really don't hear that for us.
Right.
It's a real differentiator, I think.
It is a real differentiator, and of course, it's one of the hallmarks of our culture is that virtually every person here is homegrown. If they did not start as a summer associate, they probably started after a clerkship.
So I want to turn now to talk a little bit about leadership at SNC and start with some of your leadership roles. So you have several important roles here, including serving as a member of our management committee and also as the managing partner of the firm's litigation practice. So in your view, what are some of the most important qualities one needs to be an effective leader at this moment in time?
I think there are certain qualities that are important in any leader, and I think that's true whether or not you're leading a corporation or leading a law firm, and those would include some kind of empathy. That would include, of course, empathy, vision, an ability to inspire and empower. There are obviously differences in leading a law firm, particularly that the practice of law, particularly at a firm like Sullivan and Cromwell, is a profession, and it remains a profession. Business has crept into the practice of law, but we are not and will never be simply a business. And the people who practice law here have a vocation, not just a job. Our goal is not to maximize potential for shareholders. Our goal as leaders is to make sure our culture carries, to continue traditions that are almost 150 years old while still adapting to a changing legal landscape, and to make sure that we have an environment that allows us to provide the very best service to our clients. And that means making sure as we adapt, we're adapting to raise the best lawyers to provide the best service.
That's a very important goal. And I think we would be remiss in talking about the legal landscape if we didn't mention the fact that there are very few women leaders across the profession. There certainly are some, like yourself, who have managed to tread a path to leadership. And in your case, you've been in leadership positions of one kind or another at the firm for many years. And I imagine there are a lot of young law students who will look around or look up and feel somewhat grim about their prospects when they see the lack of women leaders at the top. So I'm sure they would love to hear from you about how you were able to achieve those roles, and also whether you have any words of advice to law students who have similar aspirations.
I feel very optimistic about the prospects for women in the law generally, and certainly at S&C in particular. There are, of course, always challenges, but the law has always rewarded merit. People want to win. If you can be part of a winning team, you will be valued. And of course, the key to success in any endeavor, but certainly in the endeavor that we undertake, is to have the best minds and diverse viewpoints. This is not something that can happen if you don't retain and empower women and retain and empower diverse lawyers generally. What has changed over the time I have been here, and certainly in my view for the better, is the institutionalization of this point of view to make sure that the infrastructure is here for success, something you know about very well and work on every single day. These things were not quite so formalized when I began here, maternity and paternity leave, for example, formalized staffing. Now this is something we think about every single day. I think we thought about it every single day when I began here, but in a very different way, in a very informal way. Going back to the conversation we were having about mentoring, I would have those conversations. I know people were thinking about that, those kinds of things for me. Now it is part of my job and part of all of our jobs to make sure we all are thinking about that for every one of our associates, as well as our partners and our staff, because it matters for everybody.
It really is a job that we all need to be focused on, and not just internally. I know this has been a topic that clients have been very interested in as well, and in many cases, we've partnered with them on these kinds of things. Could you give me an example of some of the work that we've done alongside clients in this space?
What is very different now is that clients pay a lot of attention to this, and we partner with our clients to make sure that we are doing this in a way that matters to them. One of the initiatives I have worked on is with JP Morgan Chase, who had a wonderful moment recently where the head of litigation at JP Morgan Chase had gone to watch a trial. She called me as soon as the opening statements were over to tell me about this remarkable thing that happened in the courtroom. The judge, Sally Ann Scarpula, had started the trial by asking each set of teams whether they had women on the trial team and whether those women would be speaking at the trial. JP Morgan did have a woman that would be taking a role at the trial. The other side did not, but the remainder was a sea of men. And the head of litigation, Jill Santella, called me and asked to make sure that we will have 100% of our litigation teams will have 50% women on them by 2020. So we call this the 50-50 by 2020 initiative. When you have leadership and clients who recognize that success means that you have diverse viewpoints every step of the way and make sure that is a client priority to promote diverse teams, then you can bet that the law firms and this law firm will respond by making sure those opportunities are there for diverse lawyers.
Okay, so when it comes to diversity, it really does take a village. And when I think the example you gave is a really nice example of how we really are able to make significant progress when we work with our clients on these types of issues. One of the best things about S&C, I think, especially as it applies to diversity, is that there really is no S&C type, and there's definitely no one-size-fits-all approach to professional development. And instead, we seem to be the kind of place that attracts all these people with in some cases, wildly different backgrounds and personality types and experiences and perspectives. And that could be, in some ways, a recipe for disaster. And yet, in practice, all of these people seem to magically come together in this really collaborative way to produce this truly excellent work. So how is that possible that all of these people with different perspectives can work together so seamlessly? And further, why is that ultimately the best strategy for our clients?
I can't imagine anything better than having people with wildly different backgrounds, personality types, and experiences and perspectives come together to solve a problem for a client. You put your finger on it when you reference this as working together in an incredibly collaborative way to produce excellent work. The hallmark of Sullivan and Cromwell is truly a culture of collaboration. Yes, we put persons of wildly different, diverse backgrounds, education, viewpoints, practice areas in a room. We debate it out. We put twists on each other's ideas. This is how we solve the biggest, hardest problems, and that is what we do at Sullivan and Cromwell. It can be easier for people to build relationships with people who are similar to them in some way. We've all read the research on that. This is limiting. The best thing that comes from teams that have diverse experiences and perspectives, of course, is sharing those experiences and using that to develop the greatest solutions to problems. We have all types of people here. We have people with different skill sets. We have people who are introverts. We have extroverts. We have people who are detail-oriented. We have big picture people. We have people who love to stand up in court. We have people who love to dig deeply into treatises. Every single one of those people is needed in order to solve the kinds of problems that come to us.
Authenticity, I think we would all agree, is critically important, but it's also important to be able to adapt your communication and leadership styles and to be able to relate to clients or to colleagues on certain matters in ways that works for them or that works best in that particular situation. So how do you reconcile those two things? You're somebody that I think is incredibly authentic, and yet you're also totally flexible and adaptable. So how do you do those two things at once?
I think I don't have a choice in the matter. I have only ever been able to be who I am. Whether that is a strength or a weakness, I am not sure. But I don't think it's that hard to reconcile. Lawyers and litigators in particular, our job is to read a room. Our job is to persuade. We all do this. We probably started learning to do this as toddlers when we decided whether to throw a little bit of a tantrum or use our cutest face to get what we wanted. I think what I do always is try to stay true to my message and modulate it to my audience. But I agree, trying to mold your behavior to something you are not never works. And we would never expect that. We want you to be your best self. We will always have opportunities to help you become your best self.
So Sharon, the firm is really deeply committed to associates and to associate development more broadly. And you talked about that a little bit earlier, and I want to go a little bit deeper there because I know that it's something that's personally important to you and is part of the way that you lead the litigation group. So how does the firm demonstrate that commitment? And in your role as the head of the litigation group, how do you personally get involved?
I think effective associate development is at the core of the firm's strategy and is deeply embedded in our DNA and just about every single thing we do. Again, returning to the idea of a collaborative nature or a culture of collaboration. At Sullivan and Cromwell, again, we work as teams. We meet as teams. We huddle around tables. We work through problems. And when I say we, I mean the whole team. I mean the summer associate and the legal assistant. They're, again, coming back to what we were talking about, the necessity of a variety of perspective, including whether or not an idea is achievable in the amount of time you have to get it done, is critical. And I have always believed that every day when you come into the office and engage in this process, you are learning about what you're going to do tomorrow. And I think the hallmark of development is by putting people in the process. Now, there are plenty of other resources available. that we focus on, of course. We have leadership training, we have trial training, we have unparalleled exposure to cutting edge work. We have, even if you're not on a team, we meet regularly to discuss what other people are doing on their teams. And we make sure that you have the ability to learn from the best lawyers in the world, including in this very room in which we're sitting, which is our brand new moot courtroom, where we are doing extensive training so that the first time you walk into a courtroom, you will not be your first time walking into a courtroom.
The moot court does provide so many great opportunities for associates to just experience what it's like in that environment, to get up on your feet and to practice an oral argument in that setting, I think has a tremendous impact on professional development.
It's absolutely. Really, and comfort matters.
Thing. Yes, indeed. Right. Comfort matters. And I think you hit the nail on the head so nicely when you're talking about, as a professional development strategy, it's the best thing you can possibly do to put yourself in the room with the smartest people you can find and to produce your very best draft of something and give it to people who can help you make it even better.
Yeah, and watch people debate over it. You have an idea, somebody loves your idea, somebody else doesn't love your idea. Watch them take your idea and turn it into something amazing. It's spectacular.
Yeah, it's like a diamond. You refine and refine and refine, and then this beautiful thing emerges at the end of the process. One of the common misconceptions that we hear about S&C in recruiting is that we only do work for banks. So I wonder if you could take a moment, Sharon, to describe some of the work that we've done recently in other areas.
Sure. I mean, I can just describe some of the work I have done recently, and that should dissuade the idea that all we do is bank work. I have spent a great deal of the past 3 years of my life doing work for Volkswagen on the diesel-related litigation, which has been infinitely exciting and interesting and involved any measure of kinds of work from SEC investigation, criminal investigation, civil litigation, but primarily these are consumer class actions, and these are, at the end of the day, a product-related litigation. Same for the work we're doing for FCA. In addition to Volkswagen, we have been doing work for Fiat Chrysler in their emissions-related problems, for British Petroleum and some of the problems you've probably read about in the paper. I have been working closely with Airbnb on a constitutional challenge to a ordinance that has been imposed by the city of New York that would require Airbnb to turn over every piece of information it has about its hosts. We recently, in litigation group, did a trial for Pabst Blue Ribbon. And of course, way back in the day, during my associate years, I spent 10 years litigating for Microsoft all over the country. None of this is bank related. Not to say I don't do work for banks, and love doing work for banks. I do. It's fascinating work. They're fascinating clients. But it would truly be a mistake to think that that is where the not only all of our work lies, but even the vast majority of our work lies.
Thank you. That's really helpful. And you're describing a practice that sounds very generalist in nature, which is also something really important to us. And it sounds like in your practice, even just describing what you have been working on recently, that you're touching on all different areas and all different practices, which I know will be appealing to the folks who are listening to this podcast and who may not yet have decided exactly what they want to do, even if they're committed to being litigators. How has your practice evolved since you've been at the firm, and how has the firm's practice evolved?
My practice hasn't actually evolved all that much. Everything is bigger, but not so different. When I was an associate, one of the things I loved about practicing at Sullivan & Cromwell was the diversity of the types of work I had. I would be doing civil litigation in the morning, and in the afternoon, I was working on an enforcement matter or doing an internal investigation. You could sort of moderate your mood to, you could sort of modulate your mood to match the work you were doing on. I remember well, because I always thought it was so apt, that I have a partner who has a daughter who's around the same age as my daughter. My daughter always used to get the name Sullivan and Cromwell wrong and call it Sullivan and Crumble, which I thought was funny. But my partner's daughter used to call Sullivan and Cromwell Solving a Problem. She thought the name of the firm was Solving a Problem. And I just love that. I thought it was so incredibly apt, because that is what we do. That is what we did when I started here. That is what we will continue to do. There wasn't a name for it in the 90s. Now they call it crisis litigation, and that's great. We do crisis litigation. We do all kinds of litigation. We are generalists. We are counselors. We know our clients deeply. And then when they have a problem, we are there and we solve it. Again, I think the greatest difference in the practice, especially if you're coming in as an associate, is not going to be the mix of the work or the mix of the opportunities. It's going to be the size of the problem. And of course, that makes everything that much more complex, and therefore that much more interesting.
And that much more opportunity to develop skills on challenging and complex matters.
Absolutely. A big matter, a big multi-matter years ago might have been, I mentioned that I worked on Microsoft as an associate, and it was a multi-district litigation with somewhere around 250 cases filed all over the country. It was unbelievable. People could not wrap their minds around that we were undertaking this. The Volkswagen diesel litigation, thousands and thousands of cases filed. Not only consumer litigation, we have litigation from the FTC, from the Department of Justice, civil, criminal, the Securities and Exchange Commission, 50 state AGs, cities, competitors, dealers, salespeople. The complexity of the work for a litigator is exponential compared to what we started with. Also true in terms of the size of the documents, but of course also true in terms of the technology and ability to wrestle with that as well. But at the end of the day, we've never really moved away from what has been the core of being a litigator at Sullivan and Cromwell, which is to be a deeply knowledgeable counselor who solves problems for our clients.
Are there specific practice areas that you think we will invest in going forward, or that we will need more expertise in as we continue to move ahead?
I think our mix of practice areas has been relatively consistent and shall remain so. I mean, we do antitrust work, we do securities work, we do IP work, we obviously do criminal defense, internal investigations, corporate governance. But I think what happens is there's moments in time, and we deploy our resources to fit our moment in time. For several years, we were the firm to go to if you were an institution with a financial crisis problem. And to be clear, that was not just banks. We had rating agencies, we had private equity firms, and that was the nature of the work we were doing. Most of that was securities, but not entirely. Some of that was antitrust. I would say today, a vast majority of the work we're doing is product-related and IP-related. I do think we're going to continue to see a lot of investigations, criminal defense and investigations work going forward that has really never slowed for us. I think because the crises of today, again, are not simply a civil crisis or a regulatory or criminal crisis, but they are intertwined, and frankly, they tend to be cross-border. So I think what you see is the problem of the day changes, but the skill, the nature of the skills we have are deployed to match the moment in time.
For the benefits of the students who have open S&C offers, along with many other offers, and they're focused on being litigators but are trying to choose between a number of objectively really good firms, are there a couple of things that you could identify that set S&C apart and make this a particularly good choice to begin your litigation practice?
One thing I would note that may not be self-evident is the size of our group. You might be surprised at our size, including partners and associates. We are under 200 people. If you compare the size of the litigation group at Sullivan and Cromwell to our peers, you will find that we are significantly smaller than the firms you generally read about in the same newspaper articles. What that means for you, if you are considering coming here, is that you will have no choice but to get a broad range of experience. And as a byproduct of that, I will tell you that it is incredibly important, given the size of our associate teams and the need for to have associates work on multiple matters and learn multiple skills, it's incredibly important to us that you succeed. And you will succeed, because all the tools in the world are here. In many ways, Sullivan and Cromwell may be the safest place in the world to learn to swim. The waters may seem a little bit shark-infested, but the greatest life preservers in the world are your partners and your colleagues and the people who work here. It is our goal always to make sure that you do not fail, because that is the cornerstone to our success.
That's such a good point. I'm just reflecting on the size being a great point. I mean, we always talk about lean staffing, but we are, in fact, quite small. Many law students are understandably focused on trying to choose a law firm that would be a good cultural fit for their personal styles and goals. How can you ever feel entirely comfortable that one law firm is going to be a good fit for you and that it's going to be the kind of place where you think you can thrive?
Sure. First of all, don't overfret. Ultimately, you're going to make a good choice, and ultimately, whatever choice you make is probably not irreversible. If I was going to give some words of advice going into recruiting season, I would encourage you to take the time to really think about how you like to practice. Think about the size of the firm that will feel comfortable to you and what it means to be in a big law firm or a big group in a law firm versus a smaller group. And think about the style of the firm and the style of the practice. How do you like to practice? Do you prefer to be in your office? Would you like to learn one area of law deeply? Are you more comfortable sitting around the table? Do you like to collaborate? Do you like to ask questions, and do you like to be questioned? Ask those questions of the people you speak with. Ask them what it feels like to practice. Ask them what happens in their day every single day. Ask them who they interact with and how. Ask the questions, and then ultimately trust your gut.
Thank you so much, Sharon, for joining us. I know how busy you are, and it says a lot that you're willing to take the time to do this, and we really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.